Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is High Yield Horizons. I'm joined by Kunal Kamal, my podcast colleague, and I'd like to welcome back to our podcast, Triet Nguyen, Vice President of Strategic Data Operations for DPC Data. We'll be discussing the evolving risk factors in the high yield municipal market. Kunal, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Paul, and welcome, Triet.
Hello, you guys. Thanks for having me, Paul and Kunal.
So, Triet, let's start with a brief overview of your expertise in the high-yield municipal market and your current role at DPC Data.
Yes, Paul. I've been a municipal credit specialist for, I guess, a little over 4 decades now. So that makes me something of a dinosaur. Most people will remember me from my Putnam Funds days in Boston. I joined Putnam in 1985 to start a muni research team for them in support of their brand new tax-free high yield fund, which is one of the probably the first high yield tax exempt funds in the country. I later became the portfolio manager for the fund and a few state specific funds. But at the peak, the fund had assets of about $3 billion. I was lucky, I guess, to be at the inception of the high yield muni market as we know it today. So after Putnam, I had a little stint on the high yield corporate side, ran my own independent research shop, got access to advisors, and managed a high yield muni hedge fund for Saybrook. So about 5 years ago, after having spent, as you can imagine, a long time on the buy side of the market, I decided to do something different and switch over to the technology side. So I joined DPC Data as head of strategic data operations to help develop DPC's muni credit database and related data solutions. I do have to point out to our listeners that I'm no longer in the high yield market on a daily basis. So my comments shouldn't be interpreted as coming from a current market insider, but really from a market historian, so to speak.
And given that you are, as you call it, a market historian, back in 2012, you wrote a book called Investing in the High Yield Municipal Market. So my question to you is, how have the risk factors for high yield municipal bonds evolved and what new risks should investors be aware of?
Yes, I wrote the book, Paul, as the Puerto Rico situation was breaking out at the time. And as you know, it has largely played out by now, but still not fully resolved. It's a very unique situation. But over the past decade, I think we've seen much fewer, large scale distressed opportunities like we had in the 1980s and 90s, because the interest rate has been fairly benign and we've had a pretty steady economic growth period. We haven't had any corporate backed distressed opportunities like the airlines, which one after the other filed for bankruptcy back in the 80s, or any real estate related opportunity like the oil patch housing bond debacle of the late 80s. I would say the last large scale opportunity probably came in the aftermath of the Great Recession of 2008. But looking back, I think the high yield mini market remains the funding source of last resort, you know, still attracting projects that are either difficult or impossible to finance in the regular taxable or corporate market. And just thinking back, I think the two types of risk that always seem to trip up muni investors, and for some reason, most muni analysts are ill-equipped to analyze, are real estate risk and commodity risk. You still see evidence of those risks today, right? I can point to the American Dream Mall project in at the Meadowlands, which basically, of course, is the latest real estate debacle. And high yield investors are still taking the same type of commodity risk with so-called cogeneration resource recovery projects. Now, lately, some of these projects kind of wrap themselves in the sustainability mantle, but that certainly has had no bearing on their credit quality because they're still very much prone to defaulting. You know, I'm thinking of a certain pallets project down south. But we've had, you know, some recent success stories. The Brightline Transit project down in Florida, after a very shaky start, though, which probably kept its original bondholders awake at night for a few years, and has finally worked out. And it, you know, it really can come in as a true high yield opportunity. And I would say the healthcare sector continues to be a steady source of distress opportunities. And of course, that includes senior living sector, which has always gone through a boom bust cycle, you know, over the years. I would say as far as new sources of risk, and I know we're going to talk about the rising cybersecurity risk, and of course, the big one would be climate change.
Great. Speaking of these new risks, cyber attacks on municipalities have been increasing. And what risks do these attacks pose to the municipal bond market?
Thanks, Kunal. Well, for most investment-grade muni issuers, I think cybersecurity can certainly be very disruptive to their operations in the short term. But I don't think it's really not a significant enough credit factor in terms of increasing probability of default, right? Now, I think as we go forward, it may require a lot of state and municipalities to make a significant investment in their IT infrastructure. So that may have some bearing on you know, operating margins and whatnot. But really, it's more of a nuisance now than not. But with one exception, I think the healthcare sector is really particularly vulnerable to cybersecurity issues. As you can see from, if you read in the news about the Change Healthcare cyber attack back in March, which lasted probably 60 days. And, you know, for those listeners who are not aware of it, Change Healthcare is basically an insurance claims clearinghouse for most health systems in the country. So as you can imagine, once they went down, it created a major liquidity event for health system, particularly those who are already struggling with, low liquidity. So just imagine if a health system only had 60 days of cash on hand and they don't have access to reimbursements for, 60 days, that could really become a very serious credit problem. And last but not least, cyber attack can open up a health system to a litigation risk, because they have access to such sensitive patient data.
So trade insights can come from personal anecdotes, and climate risk is something that affects all of us. Is there any personal experience that caused you to have a different perspective on climate risk and look deeper into it?
Yeah, as you know, it's funny that sometimes you can gain a kind of a macro insight from, it's just a personal anecdote, right? So last spring, just about around this time, we had some water issues in our basement from the rainfall in the spring. And so I filed our first home insurance claim in 14 years, right, with Allstate, our insurer. So it was fine. The claim was handled, very, very good service. But then come policy renewal time in September, they wanted to more than double our premium. And, ours is certainly one of the quote-unquote safest areas in Illinois, in terms of climate, safety, and whatnot. So that got me thinking about what would happen to a policyholder in a more climate-challenged area like Florida, right? And then, of course, we certainly didn't stay with Allstate, and we switched to another high-quality insurer and kept our premiums pretty much the same. But then in October, I ran into this report from the First Street Foundation, which is a climate think tank, on the property insurance crisis. And they were tying the availability and pricing of property insurance, both for individuals and commercial enterprises, to a potential decline in property values around the country. They were sounding that kind of alarm. That became kind of the aha moment for me because, as you know, climate change is such a huge issue. It's very hard to get your arms around. And I was kind of struggling to find that direct link to municipal credits. And this is really, property values are probably as direct a link as you can get to the tax base of local governments. I've been running with that thesis, for the last few months, as you know. And since then, now, pretty much not a day goes by that you don't see a headline around the country about home insurance pricing and availability.
So let's drill down a little further on that topic, Chiet. In parts of the country that are becoming uninsurable due to climate change, what implications does this have for municipal bonds, particularly in high-risk areas like California and Florida? And is it possible that certain general obligation credits could become high yield?
Yes. I think at least for now, since we're talking of the potential impact of climate change on real estate, I think the risk will be really more localized than systemic, at least for now. Basically, you have to kind of make sure you have exposure to the right zip codes, literally. Then you avoid the zip codes that insurers are now viewing as uninsurable. So I would say, most state and local governments have the fiscal resources to handle that at this point, and only the geo credits that are already on the weak side probably would be at risk at falling below investment grade. I'm only talking relative values here. Would you rather have a high grade credit with low climate risk versus another similarly rated credit with significantly higher climate exposure? Because right now you can probably make that switch without any cost because the market is not making any distinction whatsoever yet.
So Triate, at DPC Data, you are focused on harnessing technology to enhance credit research and risk management. Can you share some of the innovative solutions you are working on and how they benefit market participants? Also, how important is it to have access to climate risk assessment tools when making investment decisions?
Thanks, Gunnar. Well, DPC Data has been around for over 30 years. So we've always been collecting, storing, extracting data from all types of municipal market documents. So we were EMMA before there was an EMMA, right? So over the last 5 years, I think we've developed a new financial database for municipals, which is basically designed to address all the perceived coverage gaps in the marketplace, from smaller non-rated issuers to quote-unquote high-yield sectors. But most significantly, I think we've also put together something that's, I believe, never been done in Muniland, is a methodology to identify the correct obligor for most muni issues, based strictly on credit, of course. So once identified, those obligors are then linked to the appropriate issues at the individual bond level, you know, at the QCIP 9 level. So as you can imagine, this allows market participants to correctly identify and aggregate the risk in their portfolios. And in terms of climate change, more recently, we partnered with a couple of major climate risk data providers, Spatial Risk Systems, or SRS, and then more recently, First Street Foundation, which I mentioned before, to incorporate their climate risk scores into our financial database. In our view, climate risk is just another factor in an overall credit analysis framework. Our platform allows users to incorporate climate risk assessment into their regular credit research workflow. And I think it is unique in the sense that it does allow users to look at climate risk exposure with the proper fiscal context. Obviously, the same amount of exposure means a different thing for the city of Chicago than for the city of Peoria, Illinois.
So, Triate, the last exogenous shock, I would say, in my opinion, that happened to the market, not just the muni market, but to all markets, was the pandemic. And when we zero in on the high-yield municipal market, what are the most significant changes you've observed when you compare the market pre-pandemic to post-pandemic?
Yes, you know, Paul, but once our market got over the initial systemic shock from the pandemic, this COVID crisis has actually turned out to be kind of a boon for municipal credits. You have all these massive transfers from the federal government, of course, but the revenue sources such as sales taxes and even property taxes have shown amazing resilience. And in fact, property value has actually been rising throughout the pandemic. So that have allowed states and local governments to withstand and even thrive in the post-pandemic environment. Now, having said that, certain sectors came out of the pandemic in much worse shape. As you can imagine, healthcare, to some extent, definitely the senior living sector is still reeling from the crisis. The higher education sector is certainly going through a big transition at this point. I would say public transit also suffered, but I think they might potentially be benefiting from increased state support. But then also, we should never forget that in our market, we have this plethora of single-purpose special districts, such as development districts, tax increment bonds, which may be more vulnerable to climate change, depending on location.
The last question, given everything you've experienced and the topics we've discussed today, how should an investor think about relative value in the high-yield muni market?
So, Paul, from a cyclical standpoint, I think the best time to have maximum exposure to the high-yield sector should be in a stable to maybe gently rising rate environment, right, with strong underlying economic growth, which is kind of exactly where we're at right now. You don't want to be in high yield when rates are declining rapidly, because that usually occurs when the economy is heading into recession. So I guess one can probably make a pretty good case for high yield munis right now. So as long as you as an investor have the proper tools to do your research and closely monitor the various risks in your portfolio. And there certainly are more tools, as we discussed, at your disposal now than ever before. And some of which I wish I had back in the days, you know.
Well, thanks, Triate and Kunal, for the thoughtful dialogue on the evolving risk factors in the high-yield muni market. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and/or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.